I'm Stephen Hundley from IUPUI, and this is Leading Improvements in Higher Education, a service of the Assessment Institute in Indianapolis. Our sponsor for this season is Watermark, the largest global provider of educational intelligence software solutions for higher education. This episode features three leaders from the National Association for Campus Activities. Our guests are Kayla Loper, Zachary Clark, and Amber Shivardi Houston. Kayla is manager of arts, culture, and entertainment at Oklahoma State University. At the time of this recording, Zachary was director of student activities and assessment at Indiana University of Pennsylvania. And Amber is executive director of the National Association for Campus Activities. I know you will enjoy our time with Kayla, Zachary, and Amber as we discuss the important role campus activities play in student development on college and university campuses. All on this episode of Leading Improvements in Higher Education. I am so pleased we have Kayla, Zach, and Amber with us today on an episode focused on the National Association for Campus Activities. And we'll be learning more about that organization and the important role that campus activities play on our college and university campuses. But first, let's welcome our guests. We have Kayla, Zach, and Amber. And in that order, I'll ask as we begin, we'd like to learn a little bit about each of you as individuals and professionals. So we'll ask you to briefly tell us a little bit about yourself, including your career trajectory and what you do in your current role. Kayla.
Hi, my name's Kayla. I am the manager of arts, culture, and entertainment at Oklahoma State University. So I primarily advise our Student Arts Alliance organization, but I also do a lot with our programming board here on our campus, which we refer to as the Student Union Activities Board. My role with NACA, while I was invited to contribute today, I am the current chair of our research and scholarship group, which is a group of volunteers that focus on supporting research and assessment work in campus activities through the association. Talk a little bit about my personal career goals and what I'm working on right now. I am ABD in my PhD program, which is a really exciting place to be. My program here at Oklahoma State is the Research, Evaluation, Measurement, and Statistics program in our Educational Psychology. I guess it's also a program. but I am currently writing my dissertation, and my topic is on sense of belonging, which I'll probably bring up quite a bit today. and my future goals, I really would love to either be faculty or work in a student affairs assessment role. So that's what I hope to do in the future.
Well, Caleb, welcome. And we're appreciative of you taking time out of writing the dissertation to be with us today. Let's now transition to Zach.
Hi, everybody. My name is Zach Clark, and I currently serve as Director of Student Activities and Assessment at Indiana University of Pennsylvania, also known as IUP, not to be confused with IUPUI. I advise our campus programming board and direct our campus activities office while also serving as a university assessment officer. I'm also the immediate past chair of NACA's research and scholarship group. I grew up in a small industrial town right outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and attended St. Vincent College, majoring in history and secondary education. After receiving my secondary social studies certificate from Pennsylvania, I realized that I wanted to serve students a little differently. So I enrolled in the Student Affairs and Higher Ed Master's Program at IUP, where I graduated and was ultimately hired afterwards. That was 12 short years ago. Moving forward, I'm excited to see where my career is headed, as I'm very much committed to student life, student engagement, campus activities, and assessment, evaluation, and research in higher education. Currently, I'm incredibly interested in generational research, as well as the impact of campus activities and ongoing student development, growth, and learning in higher education.
Well, Zach, since you're at IUP and we are at IUPUI, we'll have to just adopt you informally into our family as well. And we're glad that you're with us today as well. Finally, to Amber.
Stephen, thank you so much for having me. Amber Shivardi Houston, I have the privilege of serving as the executive director of the association. I first joined this team in August of 2019, so I'm rounding out my second year. I previously earned my master's in higher education administration and had intended on working on a college campus, but life took me different places. And I realized I wanted to pursue a career in association management. So when the position came to me for NACA, it was just a natural fit of my initial career interest and where my career had taken me. So I'm able to merge my passion for higher education, specifically student affairs, with association management. I am originally from a small town in Kansas, had then moved to Indianapolis after graduate school, and now I'm finding myself here in South Carolina, embracing the Southern heat and all of the hospitality that the South has to offer.
Well, Amber, welcome to you as well. And let me stay with you for this next question. I'd like to learn more about the National Association for Campus Activities. And we know that that's abbreviated as NACA or NACA. And I just will mention, we're so proud of and excited for the new partnership we have with NACA or the National Association for Campus Activities with us at the Assessment Institute. So we're going to talk about all things NACA and related activities around campus activities, but what is the mission of the association? Who is its audience? And what types of resources and services do you offer your members?
Well, I have to share, I'm very excited. We recently adopted an updated mission statement and vision statement, and this has been a year of work to identify the future direction of the association. And so our new mission statement reads as NACA empowers members to amplify the campus experience through inclusive learning, meaningful connections, and engaging entertainment that transforms college communities. And we have a unique audience. We are an association that can be a home, a community for so many different types of students and professionals. NACA has three different memberships. We include our schools, who consist of the student leaders and the practitioners. Then we also have associate members who may be an educational speaker, a poet, a musician. And then we also have our affiliate partners who are nonprofits. They may range from a fraternal organization to another organization that supports higher education through a different outlet. So we have three different memberships. And so our audience really ranges all the way from students to somebody who's going to come and present to campus or bring an activity to campus that helps foster that sense of belonging. It's, you know, we really enjoy the variety that we have when we bring our members together and really create a wonderful community. Something else that's unique about the association is that we are an association for a group. So if the school, IEPY, is a member, we serve the entire school. So all departments can participate and leverage our resources, which is a little bit unique, whereas a number of other professional or trade associations, that membership may belong to the member, whereas the institution is the member. And so the multicultural office, fraternity, sorority life, programming board, other departments can leverage all of our resources and our member portal to assist with their student success, student programming, student life needs. And that's something that we've really been trying to flex our resources muscle and provide greater resources to institutions. Most recently, we unveiled a number of different considerations documents, and those have been documents that help prompt practitioners and how to program and support students so that they can foster community on their college campuses. Additionally, all of our curriculum is rooted in our competencies. We have DEI competencies. We also have competencies for students and for practitioners. And then that, of course, has dictated our curriculum roadmap. And that curriculum roadmap guides our in-person programming, but also our virtual programming and events and the resources that we develop for student, professionals, and associate member activities. So we're a little bit unique. We're a little bit different than other associations, but we're really enjoying the opportunity to meet the needs of so many different departments on college campuses.
Amber, thank you for that introduction to an overview of the National Association for Campus Activities. This would be a good time to invite our listeners to visit their website, NACA.org. And Kayla, in the response that Amber was providing, she mentioned, and I quote, the mission of NACA is in part to amplify the campus experience. So Kayla, why are campus activities an important part of the collegiate experience? What impact do they have on student experience and student outcomes? How do they complement academic courses and programs on our campuses? Kayla.
Yeah, so I think thinking back to our history classes that we've taken, campus activities actually started on college campuses in the roles of the faculty. So there's the concept of in loco parentis, where faculty were obviously teaching class, but they were kind of taking care of these young people who showed up and maybe didn't have leadership skills or know how to live outside of their homes. So modern day campus activities, typically the role is not taken on by faculty anymore. And we typically don't view ourselves as their, I guess, parents away from home, but we do provide a variety of avenues for that holistic development, which I think is where they were really getting at back in the day. So Amber mentioned a lot of different departments that can benefit from NACA. Thinking about just the like types of programming or types of support that we can provide, you may see this in a variety of departments. So campus activities, you know, is going to focus on the programming, which is probably one of the biggest pieces of what we currently see NECA helping with, bringing entertainment, educational opportunities, seeing things that you've never seen before, kind of opening your eyes. It also covers student governance. So really that policy piece of trying to help advocate for your fellow students, make difference on your campus. There's transitional support. So whether that's through an extended orientation camp or from your first year to your second year is a really hot topic right now. All those things fall in campus activities. One of the really big pieces that I think has gained a lot of traction because of the pandemic is focusing on making sure our students have their basic needs. What types of insecurities are they needing help with, or is that met through a food pantry or our campus? We recently started a pantry that provides like menstrual products for women who maybe don't have access or the resources to buy those for themselves. We call that our Red Pantry here on campus. So all of these pieces are helping students be able to function successfully in the classroom. The easy answer is that employers want students who've had these experiences. They want students who have advanced leadership development skills. So obviously they want students who have the knowledge that they've learned in the class, but they want those that are also going to lead the way on their team or really bring people together. So I think that's something that campus activities plays a huge role in. One of the things, I'll try not to bore you too much since it's my dissertation topic, so I could probably talk about it at length, but this concept of sense of belonging really refers back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And students, so knowledge attainment is on one of the levels, but below that is this sense of belonging. So if students do not have or feel like they belong on your campus, they're going to seek that before they're able to learn something. So I think that's really going to be something we focus on. And I think the solution or the support is going to come from campus activity. So I think that's really the ways that what we do in our day-to-day jobs supports the academic pursuit of a college degree.
Kayla, thank you. You're describing an array of campus activities, including programming, entertainment, educational opportunities, student governance, orientation, supporting rising sophomores, and helping to meet the basic needs for students, all in the pursuit of holistic development and establishing a sense of belonging for students. So quite a diverse array of interventions and opportunities in the campus activities umbrella, or under that umbrella, I should say. So Zach, turning to you, let's talk about some of the important elements that go into designing effective campus activities. What are some promising practices in doing just that, helping to develop strategies and activities to support the student experience? What are some ways that you have either implemented or observed sound design in how these activities get implemented in higher education institutions? And you could also talk about any pitfalls to avoid in program development. Zach.
Sure. So when we think about effective campus activities programs, I think about three broad areas. The first area, starting with why, the second area, effective education, and the third area is leveraging the pre-professional. So, with that first area, it may sound incredibly trite, but it's so very important to channel your inner Simon Sinek and start with the why. Creating strong mission, vision, and purpose statements for your office and your programming organizations, while also approaching programmatic offerings from a student-centered, student-led perspective, are invaluable in the design of effective campus activities programs. Additionally, when thinking about staffing and supervision, clearly established expectations that are frequently referenced set a clear understanding of culture in the space. So for example, our staff expectations for IUP's campus programming board, and our campus programming board is called STATIC, the Student Activity Committee. We have 8 core expectations, and those expectations are student-centeredness, student leadership, collaboration, diversity, equity, and inclusion, high quality, affordability, flexibility, and professionalism. And throughout the experience, my student leaders are reminded over and over and over again of those 8 core expectations. And not just that, but when they're evaluated on their staff evaluation forms, those expectations are what's mapped on their evaluation form. So again, It's frequently referenced, those expectations in the space. So that's the culture that they're used to. And again, it's also tied directly to the mission, vision, and purpose statements of the office. So again, starting with the why is incredibly important. Along with mission building and expectation setting goes effective educational experiences, including how-to deep dive experiences, things like semester trainings. So those are the multi-day experiences when we dig in and we try to build a team from scratch and we try to educate our team on what it's like to operate as a programming board, what it's like to work in an office space, what it's like to build a program, build an event, run a concert for the first time ever as an undergraduate student or graduate student. Second would be on-the-job experiential training. So you learned how to do it in a deep dive training session, like a semester training, but now that you're in the office space, man, what's it like to actually be at an event, how to do an event, how to run an event? That's an invaluable educational experience, and it's a high-impact practice. We know that it's a high-impact practice. Third, shadowing. Before or after an educational experience begins, it's invaluable for the student to be able to sit back and observe and get their hands into the experience and observe somebody that's doing the job already. Fourth would be a one-on-one mentoring experience. So working closely with myself or one of the graduate students that they'll be working with as a graduate assistant within my office, working one-on-one with one of those individuals to see how they're doing, what they can be improving upon, what their strengths are, what their areas of improvement could be, what their possible opportunities for growth, some of their upcoming threats, what they could be, where their own personal pitfalls could be, et cetera. And then additionally, in a final educational experience would be involvement in national organizations like NACA, and it's lineup of amazing professional development opportunities. Most students have never done full-scale event planning before, which is why as a functional area in student affairs, campus activities is so tough, right? Like we aren't just serving and educating students like many other functional areas. We're also providing full-scale multi-million-dollar event programming in service to our campuses and to our wider communities. So being able to transform students from novices to pre-professionals takes in-depth, intense training. And the most successful campus activities programs have very successful multi-phasic educational experiences. Finally, effective campus activities programs leverage the pre-professional connections they have on their own campuses through their programming. They have an impeccable event planning process in place. They collaborate with all of the right campus and community partners. They manage their marketing, their advertising, and their promotional resources very well. They effectively evaluate their programs before, during, and after their events have taken place. Constantly learning, constantly improving their processes, their people, and their products. By elevating the discourse beyond a quote-unquote college experience and setting the bar higher to a pre-professional experience, the yield becomes greater. And that activities program, man, that just becomes the gold standard. Aside from those that I've already mentioned, some promising practices or effective strategies that I've used personally at IUP and some that I've observed being used by other colleagues at peer institutions that have yielded some high-performing campus activities programs are leveraging collaboration where possible. Since so many offices try to do the same things over and over on our campuses, it's so much easier to spread resource burden across multiple offices and also not to program against each other. Buy-in across campus, especially with academic partners. Campus activities programs are most effective when they're seen as integral to the mission of the institution, not when they're seen as tangential or fragmented from the mission of the institution. The most successful campus activities programs are those where the staff leading the office, as well as the support staff and the student leaders, are given the space to share the impact and the value of their contributions to long-term holistic learning, growth, and development of students. However, what goes along with that is campus activities staff that is conversant at upper administration level that can fluently speak the language of assessment, evaluation, and research, data analytics, and student development theory. And then going along with that, mapping performance to outside metrics, including the NACA competency guides, which have been an invaluable resource. These guides establish competencies for both professionals and student leaders, as well as using the frameworks for professional standards established by the Council for the Advancement of Standards in Higher Ed, which also referred to as CAS. That has given me a wealth of knowledge to be able to just absolutely develop a top tier campus activities program. Number one pitfall to avoid, Stephen, existing as a rudderless ship, flailing about without purpose, mission, expectation, goals, or connections while trying to program in the dark, not knowing what your intended audience wants or needs. Man, that's a recipe for disaster. It'll only frustrate the office, the student leaders, and the campus community. And the number two pitfall, try to operate without an informative, multifaceted assessment plan in place to help inform your decision making.
Well, Zach, you're describing the pitfalls to avoid, but before that, you gave us a lot to think about concerning the significance and complexities involved in campus activities. You reminded us the importance of establishing the why, the necessary approaches to having effective educational experiences and what goes into designing them, and to leverage pre-professionals in this work. And you made mention of high impact practices in your answer. And I'd like to invite our listeners to consult season one, episode 11 of this podcast, Leading Improvements in Higher Education, where you can learn more about high impact practices, sometimes referred to as HIPs. Amber, you're the executive director of NACA, so you're certainly aware that its vision is to, quote, create college communities where everyone belongs, and that one of your core values is inclusivity. So, Amber, how does NACA address and respond to issues of equity and justice in higher education.
Stephen, thank you so much for raising this question. And I want to point out that when the association was developing our updated vision and mission statements, we were very specific when we were selecting the word college communities. And this was prior to the pandemic. And I'm so thankful for the thoughts that the volunteers had when they were working with us to develop the statement, because communities is something that can be in person and can be virtual. And I think we have certainly seen the importance that community plays for us locally and globally through difficult and trying times, but also, you know, the role that communities play in supporting each other and the leadership that we expect. NACA is working every day to practice inclusivity internally and externally. We know that we can be the ones that create change, that lead the way and model what inclusivity can look like for institutions and for our associate members. The association knows that the competencies that we have been utilized by a number of institutions. I've been contacted over the past 2 years to speak to the competencies document and to speak to how we suggest applying those to an institution or to a business that engages with higher education. And those competencies are something that we know that we need to live by and practice every day. So those competencies are used to design the curriculum, the resources, and even the brave spaces for dialogue. And that's something that we've been offering for the past year and a half, is an opportunity to come together and have a brave space where you can be vulnerable, authentic, and exchange ideas, ask questions, and also share how you are doing as an individual. Because we know it's so important that our practitioners are at a good place holistically so that they can holistically care for the student, such as Kayla initially shared when we were talking about the role that student life and campus activities professionals play on college campuses. All of these resources and all of the curriculum that we've been designing are meant to provide training, but also be applicable to institutions so that practitioners can be the ones that are creating change, are creating movements. And so we know that our role is to provide the training and the information that will give practitioners the knowledge and skill sets to create that change. The association has not been shy to make statements where we feel it's important for higher education and those that engage with higher education to recognize where we as a global community can improve, where we can do better. But at the end of the day, everything comes back to NACA's values and our competencies, and we encourage everyone to use them. That's why they're on our public website, so that everybody can leverage them and utilize them for creating curriculum, creating program learning outcomes, and also be used not only as an individual professional, but also with student advising. So we know, and we take it with great responsibility, that we can be change makers and leaders. And that's something that we talk about regularly with our board of directors, with our staff, and with our volunteers. You know, one simple change that we're making internally that we hope has a significant impact is being thoughtful about any unrecognized bias that we may have in our internal policies and procedures. So for one example, is we've reviewed with a group of volunteers any unintentional barriers that we have with our volunteer application and placement policies and practices, and the same with our scholarships. And we know that that's one way that we can model an internal change that yields an external impact. And we hope that by doing that as an association, we are then demonstrating how to be vulnerable and how you can apply that to your own practices.
Amber, thank you for describing the importance of the vision of NACA around creating college communities where everyone belongs. You mentioned the competencies associated with doing so. And again, I invite listeners to visit NACA.org. That's NACA.org to make these competencies come to life in your local context. So Kayla and Zach, let me ask you to each follow up on Amber's response with some specific examples from your own institutional contexts. Kayla will first come to you, followed by Zach. So Kayla, how can campus activities foster an inclusive environment and experience for students? What are some examples of programs aimed at enhancing and embracing, I should say, and serving students from all types of backgrounds and communities? Kayla.
Sure. So I think the example that I'm pretty excited to share this with folks. Our campus has been talking a lot about the language that we use. So our mascot here is Pistol Pete. He's a cowboy. We're all things cowboy, Western, horses, and stuff like that. So we always welcome everybody to the cowboy family, and we use this language a lot. But then I think something that's become common practice with a lot of our diversity, equity, and inclusion programming is that we give it some kind of name that describes diversity, equity, inclusion. And so I think what's been happening is students hear that one of those words and they immediately like roll their eyes. They're not super interested in coming. It sounds like a chore. Or I think particularly our underrepresented students feel like immediately whoever's sponsoring that is checking the box that they have to. They're not necessarily actually including them in the family. So we've been talking a lot about this with our programs. And a couple that we are intentionally planning in the fall that we've thought a lot about what we call them, which is such an easy thing to do. Like I have complete control over what we name this program. It's a free thing to change. We've talked a lot about this. So we're planning a movie series in the first 6 weeks of class. Every other week, we're going to show a movie. And they're each going to have different themes. We're going to have a short panel after it. The first movie, we're hitting a lot on sexual violence. Our second movie, talking about different racial issues. And then our third movie, we're talking a lot about the Asian American experience. And so rather than calling this like the diversity movie series, telling people we're going to have these panelists, we're simply calling it Pete's Movie Reel Series. Again, our mascot is Pistol Pete. And we're literally just going to advertise it as a movie. We're not even going to mention that there are these panelists until they've shown up, and then definitely invite everybody to stay after the movie for a short while. So I think that stuff like this can go a long way from not making our underrepresented students feel othered, because diversity programs, I think, frequently have just those underrepresented populations at them. So that's one of them. I've also been working with our performing arts building on campus for essentially a diversity performance series. I kind of brought the same conversation to them. They were talking about a lot of words like kaleidoscope and mosaic, which are all great words and I think can describe what they're trying to get at. But I threw out there some words from our alma mater, the Loyal and True. And why don't we just call it the Loyal and True Performance Series? It truly recognizes that they're part of our cowboy family. It's not necessarily labeling it as this diversity concept, even though that is what the purpose is. And I just think language that we use can go a long way. And we may not even have thought of things like how we refer to things, maybe othering people accidentally.
Kayla, thank you for those examples, including the importance of being thoughtful around how programs are designed and implemented, including the language choice that we use to value all of our students. So, Zach, likewise to you, maybe an example or two from your perspective.
Yeah, and first, let me say, Kayla, thank you so much for providing those examples for sure. And what I would share is, you know, campus activities programs are the spaces where all students come together to celebrate and to relax and to have fun and to unplug and to reconnect with campus. And we can do that intentionally. We can do that by intentionally building environments with social justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion in mind, right? Like, and we specifically at IUP, we note that Indiana is a predominantly white region. You know, our region is pushing 70% white. and 30% all other, all other identities. So not only do we build programs that absolutely welcome all, but we also build programs that lift up marginalized and minoritized populations. So a great example of this from this past year at IUP was our Kinks and Curls event. It was a celebration of natural hair and natural skin and part of IUP's Black History Month programming. It was originally built as an in-person event, but it was shifted to a virtual format in light of the pandemic. We worked with various community-based and alumni-owned businesses, as well as various other student hair and skin specialists, as they highlighted the various ways that they care for their various diverse hair and skin needs, and needs that were representative of all different backgrounds, all different communities, all different identities. So it was very uplifting to see, different individuals with all different identities come together and share and work together and show what they needed and the products they needed and the processes that they used to be able to care for and show off their beautiful hair and their beautiful skin. And it was a resounding success. It was embraced by not only our predominantly white student body, but it was also absolutely embraced by and lifted up by our minoritized populations as well. Some other examples include our annual event called Spa Night Bro-Out. It's our pre-finals relaxation event that occurs every fall semester, and it stresses the importance of self-care across all gender identities. And it attempts to dispel the myth of self-care being a cisgender female-only task. And what we do is we work closely with our LGBTQIA advocacy organizations, IUP Pride, as well as the Division of Student Affairs to provide all of the resources with regards to our different gender identity support systems here on campus and in our communities. And we also try to work hard with our different health and wellness organizations on campus to offer students different stress and relaxation, stress mitigation and relaxation support systems pre-finals. So again, these are just some of the ways that we take a little bit different view from what Kayla was suggesting, but we're trying our hardest to lift up those identities that do get glazed over in a very much predominantly white town like Indiana and a very much predominantly white institution like IUP.
Zach, thank you, of course, for those examples. And I'd like to continue with you for the next question. And in the pitfalls answer from a prior question, you mentioned the importance of doing assessment and improvement. And that's going to be the focus of this question. So how do those responsible for leading campus activities determine their effectiveness? In other words, how do professionals go about assessing and improving their work? And additionally, what are some research themes you have noticed from the vantage point you have and have held within NACA? Zach.
Yeah, those are great questions, Stephen. And I should note that I've alluded to, like you said, I've alluded to a few of those points already, but campus activities professionals, you all hold a very special place in my heart, but man, sometimes we treat AER, that is assessment, evaluation, and research, man, we treat those terms as like the Mac daddy of all four letter words. Mention assessment during a staff meeting and you can definitely clear the room out fast. But I'm here to punctuate that meaningful assessment and evaluation, and yes, sometimes even research, does not have to be cumbersome or scary or time consuming to be effective. And those campus activities leaders most effective in their roles are most effective because of their effective assessment and evaluation plans that they have in place. Effective assessment and evaluation plans are multifaceted and embrace the full array of student affairs assessment types. And these are some of the types that we all remember probably from our student affairs, master's programs outlined in Upcraft and Shoes, titular work from 1996. They assess utilization and track who uses what and how often. They assess student wants and needs and other types of preferences. They assess student satisfaction. They assess student learning and developmental outcomes. And those student learning outcomes are departmental outcomes that are mapped to institutional or divisional learning outcomes, or they just use institutional or division learning outcomes themselves. They assess cost effectiveness and they assess campus environment and culture. They benchmark offerings against comparable institutions, and they utilize professional standards, all when they're able to and when it's applicable, and when they can afford to do so, since those three areas are kind of, bulky and cost prohibitive oftentimes, But to that end, the most effective campus activities leaders think about assessment and evaluation as a cycle, one that truly never ends. They recognize that every office and its offerings have a litany of problems and variables, so they develop a purpose with associated goals and intended outcomes. They then devise an assessment approach that meets those goals and begin collecting data. They analyze the data and define solutions to the problems. Then the solutions are implemented and the results are reported and studied. Then the whole process begins again to see if a change was reported. If the outcome was achieved, great, tackle the next problem. If the outcome wasn't, try again. Thus, the cycle continues in either case. Some really easy examples of really effective assessment and evaluation in my day-to-day work include event analysis forms, campus activity programming surveys, pre- and post-event surveys. We have a divisional-wide homegrown survey that's called the Student Learning Outcome Satisfaction Survey, and that's mapped directly to our divisional learning outcomes. That helps us tackle student learning and developmental outcomes for our student leaders in particular. Static staff evaluation forms, if you remember, that's what's mapped to our staff expectations. The group effectiveness scale, different SWOT and PET analyses, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats, and preserve, enhance, and transform analyses, new event preference surveys, marketing assessments, semester reports, annual reports. And then thematically, campus activities programming as a functional area is in a strange place, And I say that because we were so critically impacted by the COVID-19 global pandemic, as in-person programming was identified as being one of the riskiest transmission avenues that the virus had and has. So much of the research that had started pre-COVID has lost so much steam. To that end, the impact of COVID on campus activities as a functional area overall will definitely be a hot research area for the foreseeable future, I believe. However, from that vantage point, like you spoke about, and I have 6 years of experience with NACA from my role as past chair of RSG. However, RSG is completing its work surrounding the financial project. That was our large continuation of a decades-long analysis on the collection and use of student activity fees by institution for campus programming. RSG is also nearing completion of its student engagement project, where it sought to better understand how campus activities professionals saw their positionality and the contributions to student engagement as a theoretical construct from an institutional perspective. And looking forward, RSG and NACA just approved the newly updated research agenda. And the research agenda highlights the new research priorities for the association for ideally the next 5 to 7 years. And what we're seeing is research centered around four major focuses, foci. We're looking at the understanding of the impact of campus activities. So including in that first focus, the sense of belonging, student success, and student engagement. The second focus would be student learning and development. And when we talk about that focus area, we're talking about post-graduation employability and preparation, beyond the classroom skill development, event planning, and lifelong dedication to learning and development. The third focus area would be the professionalization of campus activities, including student organization advising, graduate preparation, and professional development. And the fourth focus area, which is really interwoven in all of those other focus areas and really is interwoven in the work of all of what we do at NACA and beyond, is in the work of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And as a special sneak peek, I would encourage you all to take special note of a forthcoming, very special issue of the Journal of Campus Activities Practice and Scholarship, also known as JCAPS. That's the scholarly journal for campus activities that is published by NACA. I would encourage you to take note of the very special issue of JCAPS, which is coming out sometime late in the fall, that is going to deal with research in campus activities that's going to deal solely with diversity, equity, and inclusion. And it's going to be chock full of research that's going to really just blow your socks off, Stephen. So definitely encourage your listeners to pay close attention to that.
Well, Zach, we certainly will be on the lookout for that special issue. And I would also invite listeners to learn more about what NACA is doing, again, at their website, naca.org, but also at our website, assessmentinstitute.iupui.edu, where plentiful resources exist to help with campus activity, assessment, and improvement. Kayla, let me now come to you and ask you about those who are responsible for leading campus activities and how they might partner with others across campus. So these are, of course, faculty and staff members who work in areas beyond the campus activities portfolio. How can colleagues working within campus activities partner with others across campus and even members of the external community to advance their work? What are some strategies all of us working in higher education can implement to focus on the holistic development of students? Kayla.
Sure. So I think Zach kind of referenced this a little bit earlier, but it can be incredibly frustrating as an event planner and someone who's been supporting this work on college campuses, as well as advising students and how to plan quality events, when you show up and other departments are essentially duplicating what you are intending to do. Or I remember just a couple of years ago, this would have had to be pre-pandemic, but there were like 7 carnivals planned in the same week in April. And it can just be really frustrating. So I've found that I have to kind of shift my mindset and tell myself, okay, how do I use collaboration and take advantage of the resources that exist on our campus? Because I think part of that frustration comes from, you know, we have received budget cuts, and why are we duplicating things if we're getting budget cuts? You know, why can't the resources that went to all 7 of those carnivals go to one large carnival? Or why can't we, you know, use those resources a little bit better, maybe diversify what we're offering? So rather than discouraging other folks on campus from planning events and programs that are similar to ours, I found a lot of success of simply going and asking if we can plan it together. So kind of bringing those resources together. Some examples of this past year, again, we had to get creative. So we started planning drive-in movies. We found that our intramural staff on campus couldn't host a lot of their typical intramural sports. So they had some resources just kind of sitting around. And so talked with them, and the way that they operate, they actually have a lot of staff members that are students that they pay, whereas we operate for the most part, completely volunteer based. So thinking about needing to manage large parking lots, getting everybody parked, we utilized their staff that they were able to insure came because they wanted to get paid, but then they also kind of had this higher level of expectation of completing a job. And then we utilized our volunteer student leaders who are maybe more used to brainstorming how to engage with people. And they kind of facilitated like our selling concessions concept at the drive-in movie. So really tapped into their resources of they have more staff than we do. You can also tap into knowledge areas. We partner all the time with our Office of Multicultural Affairs. We do not claim to be experts in all identities or resources that people need. So easy partnerships with them. I found that those areas typically are even more underfunded than our area. So we actually tend to bring funds to help support the work that they do, which are also just really great initiatives to have on campus. And then monetary resources. One thing that I've found is that Residence Life does a lot of programming as well. So maybe having that conversation of how do we ensure that it's not just students from the specific residence hall attending the event, but we plan something bigger, but we combine our money to make a bigger, better experience rather than having all these small hodgepodgey, small budget things. So just having those conversations, I found that most people are open to them. And honestly, it brings me a lot of peace of mind as an event planner. I have more control of making sure things aren't duplicated. I'm in those conversations and saying like, hey, you don't need to plan a drag show. We already have a drag show. So why don't you just bring all your students to this one that already exists and then we can do something else. But then we also have a higher quality of experience on campus. If you're combining resources, expertise, knowledge, it's just a better experience for everybody.
Kayla, thank you. You're reminding us of the importance of optimizing resources, collaborating with others on events, and tapping into knowledge areas across campus. Thanks for those important reminders around the nature of partnering with others to advance campus activities. So, Amber, I'd like to return to a conversation that you began about the college communities and talk about recommendations you might have for colleagues working in campus contexts that may not be traditional residential oriented in terms of the types of students they serve. And in this way, we're talking about, for example, perhaps community colleges, commuter campuses, or even institutions with a predominantly online presence. And we should note this would be maybe pre-pandemic online presence. How can campus activities be advanced, in these types of settings? What are some opportunities or considerations there? And what recommendations about resources you have at NACA that you might recommend to listeners?
I do want to share that the association has a considerable number of members that are from what we would deemed the non-traditional campus. We have a very large presence of two-year institutions and system-wide institutions and online-focused institutions. So our membership really varies when it comes to the types of institutions. And that's something that we are very thoughtful of when we are creating resources and when we're creating spaces for people to come together. One of the opportunities that we provide for professionals is our peer affinity chats. And so that way people can come together and network and share and really have that opportunity to swap ideas with similar types of institutions. And also, you know, we offer that for different identities as well. So we offer it from a institution, but also an individual basis. But those peer affinity chats are really a great space for people to come together and talk about how they're leveraging resources and also how they're, you know, where they're finding success with a program, an initiative on their institution, and where they're not, so that we can all learn from each other. You know, and those resources, you know, we try to be very thoughtful. We do have specific resources for different types of institutions. Our digital library is called Encore. And so you can search with different filters and really encourage members of the association and those that are considering to become members of the association to utilize that library and then use those filters so that you can identify, okay, what type of resources am I looking for? And is it important for that resource to be specifically targeted for my type of institution? Now, something that is very, you know, not as dynamic, but is so important. And it's a resource that was recently developed, and it was just one of those that we knew we needed to update, was a guide that walks practitioners through developing program learning outcomes and then how they can assess that program so that they can collect, measure, and really demonstrate the impact of campus programming so that they can share that value to, you know, their senior student affairs officer for their institution. And that's one of those resources that's incredibly nimble, but we know it's important to always provide that data and demonstrate the value that programming, whether it be in the virtual space, whether it be on campus, whether it be off campus and within the community, we need to demonstrate the value and how that really lends itself to student success and student retention. So we have some of those resources there that guide someone through that, because it may be their first time doing it, or maybe they've been out of graduate school a few years and need to dust up their learning outcome developments. They need that refresher. Now, Zach already mentioned this, but the association just recently adopted an updated research agenda, and that was developed by a wonderful group of volunteers who, wanted to create the agenda that could be applicable for the association, but it's also something that individual practitioners can use to guide the scholarship work for their institution. And again, to help them articulate the value that campus activities and student life has in that student experience and student success. Something else that we have yet to mention on today's conversation is NACA Next, which is a resource that students can use. And we are in partnership with NACE, and it helps provide students an opportunity to do a self-evaluation, but also their campus advisor can do an evaluation. And it helps them think about the employer skill sets that employers are looking for and the skill sets that they've been able to develop and fine-tune during their collegiate experience. And that's a wonderful employability tool that is available for members of the association. And that's, again, one of those resources that works for a student programmer that is programming in a virtual space, but also in what was previously considered that traditional on-campus experience. So lots of different resources available online, but I think that there's so much to be said in the power of networking and the in-person and virtual time that the association provides practitioners to come together and to share and utilize how they have been using resources and where they found greatest success.
Amber, thank you for describing the various resources to support campus activities for engaging students in all institutional types. Let's now ask us to pan back a little bit and look ahead in the next few years. I'd like to ask each of you to briefly describe a trend you see affecting higher education. The higher education sector more broadly. How are you and your colleagues prepared to maybe address that trend? We'll first start with Amber, then continue with Kayla, and then conclude for this question with Zach. So Amber, a trend from your perspective.
Something that I'm seeing is the change in responsibilities and what's being asked of a practitioner in student affairs. Student affairs practitioners are continuously, and even now through the financial crunch that we all find ourselves in, being asked to do more. And so something that NACA can do is help train and support the practitioner through training programs, but also through resources. And then let us train your student leaders so that we can take that burden off of the practitioner. I see this trend happening, but I worry that it's going to continue to, as people want to merge and combine departments so that that responsibility list continues to grow for the practitioner. So that's a way that NACA can hopefully help ease the burden a little bit, is let us support and train the practitioner and provide that ongoing training, and also provide that training to student programmers, whether that be through our institutes or our summer series or through one-time trainings. That's something that I see happening, but also, this is a trend that we saw before the pandemic, and we're going to see it afterwards, is continuously demonstrating the value and the financial commitment to higher education, and how are those fee dollars being returned to the person, to the student and to the family that may be supporting that student. And that's where it's so important that we help with our assessment and our research of demonstrating the value of campus programming in the student satisfaction and the student success and retention, that it impacts the individual and therefore impacts the institution. So, you know, those are two areas where the association can really assist the practitioner in, with the changing environment that we're seeing.
Amber is describing the trends of the importance of investing in professional development, not only for practitioners, but also indeed for students themselves, and making sure that we are demonstrating value of campus activities and their contributions to the broader collegiate education. So Amber, thanks for those trends. Kayla, now to you for a trend from your perspective.
Yeah, I think a trend that I've been thinking a lot about recently is that this idea of identity development, which, you know, we learn about in our master's programs of that not every student, depending on their identity, develops the same way. And so needing to know the best ways to support students from a variety of identities. And I think that identities are just going to be continue becoming more unique. You know, we're just wrapping up Pride Month, and I think there's been so much growth in the area of gender identity, sexuality identities, but even like generational differences. It's something we've started talking about more. I believe that I'm and hoping that our society continues to encourage and give confidence to those to better figure out what their identities are. I've been thinking a lot about how can we support students who come from such a wide range of types of identities. You know, representation matters, but there's only so many full-time positions for every student. So we may not be able to always have staff members that they can directly similarly identify with, but we can still find ways to support them. So I think about how we can address this. First of all, I think that's why sense of belonging has become such a popular buzzword right now in the field of student affairs as a whole. I think that we are recognizing that a lot of our students do not feel that they belong, and we're just now kind of putting some language to that. So there's a desire there to increase their sense of belonging. So we need to be able to measure it, identify it, and then come up with interventions that can help support increasing that sense of belonging. But thinking through like an assessment lens, something that we are currently working on within RSG for NACA is we're taking a look at all of the demographic questions that we ask, which demographic questions are very common in like all assessment work. But with the increase in types of identities, it's going to become pretty easy to start identifying who people are in the assessment results, even if you don't have their name, even if you don't have their address or anything that could, you may be able to like pick them out knowing their identity. So I think it's going to be really important that we protect that in our assessment work and make sure that we are still using good ethical standards. So maybe there's different ways we need to be asking those questions, but make sure we aren't othering them by the way that we ask questions. So that's a current project that RSG is working on right now.
Kayla, thank you for reminding us of a trend both now and into the future concerning identity development and really the more unique identities that our students and others are bringing to our campus contexts. Now, Zach, to you for a trend from your perspective.
Yeah, thanks, Stephen. And for me, I think a trend that's hitting me much more locally as a trend across higher ed right now is just the positionality of campus activities in terms of a profession and how it's viewed. The way it's viewed and the home that it has at the institution. So campus activities programming is not just fun and games, you know, so we're not the mindless, listless, fluff staff on campus that excel at crafts, icebreakers, and group activities. We're vital to the core academic and co-curricular mission of the institution. We're essential to continue the educational experiences of the classroom and the development of transferable skill sets for students. And we're the professionals on campus that are informed by 75 years of research, theory, data, and frameworks of educational philosophy derived by some of the greatest minds in higher education. And as Caleb pointed out, like, student involvement and student engagement are not just buzzwords. Students that are involved in meaningful organizations and activities are more connected to their institutions. And when they're connected, they find a place to belong. And students that are engaged in their educational experience build resilience and are able to advocate for themselves and for their ongoing success, learning, and development. They recognize that they're a contributing factor to their growth rather than a passive bystander. You know, campus activities makes involvement and engagement accessible to all students, and you all listeners, most of whom are serving as administrators or as assessment professionals and as academic partners, can advocate for student affairs and campus activities professionals, you know, by inviting us around these spaces. So I think that that's a trend across the higher education, across the higher education sector, is that I feel as though we can see campus activities as a more valuable partner to ongoing student success than what it's been viewed as for the past 20 years or so. And I feel as though the COVID-19 pandemic and the associated affordability and accountability crises that have crept up over the last two decades that have made a lot of institutions question what can we afford and what's worth the bang for our bucks on our campuses. Some of the first things to go on the chopping block have been things like campus activities. Yet at the same time, the campus activities repertoires are exactly what I referenced when I spoke of student involvement and student engagement and the impacts that we have on ongoing success, learning, development, and growth in our students. So I see that as a trend that really is going to make a huge impact, not just for campus activities, but for student affairs and higher education beyond, as what we've seen, especially with data that we're collecting, not just with NACA, but with a great partnership that Amber brought up earlier between NACA and NACE, which is our career services national organization, professional organization. But the data that we're receiving from employers when they're saying, hey, our new employees are not as prepared as colleges are saying they are. We need new employees that are much more aligned with pre-professional skills, and we need employees that are better communicators and better problem solvers and better listeners and need to tackle technical skills. Well, that speaks directly to what student affairs and campus activities can offer. And that's a trend in higher education that we really should be talking about. And it's going to come to a head, I believe, in the next 3 to 5 years as the dollars and cents in higher education become much more spread thin.
Zach's reminding us of the importance of the positionality of campus activities as a profession and a trend to watch for the future. And since both Zach and Amber mentioned NACE, the Collegiate Career Connection Organization, let's give a shout out to their website for listeners who'd like to learn more. That website, naceweb.org. As we conclude, I would like to ask each of you to leave our listeners with a brief final thought. For this, we'll first come to Kayla, followed by Zach, and then conclude with Amber. Kayla.
In my role as the chair of the Research and Scholarship Group for NECA, I simply wanted to extend an invitation. I'd be excited and honored to work alongside other folks that are interested in assessment in campus activities realm. So definitely reach out to me. My contact info should be an easy Google search, and I would be happy to find ways to get you plugged in. I just started my term, so I've been in this role for about a month, and I will be doing the good work for the next almost 2 years.
Kayla, thanks so much, and I will acknowledge we will provide a link to NACA on our website at assessmentinstitute.iupui.edu. And of course, listeners can go directly to your website to connect as well. That would be naca.org. Zach, your final thought.
Thanks, Stephen. As we depart, I would just I would encourage all of us to support each other, find the good in each other, and really listen to each other and listen to understand, not just listen to respond. And let's truly collaborate and engage. All of the buzzwords that are out there used to actually mean something, and they can mean something again if we really remember what weight they carry. All of us have a space at the table, and all of us have a purpose to share. So, you know, feel free, like Kayla had mentioned, please reach out. I would love to engage in any conversations surrounding campus activities and the impacts that campus activities have. You know, if you want to engage in any meaningful discussion around assessment, evaluation, research, feel free to reach out. Any discussions about research with regards to generational studies, those are, again, all three of my areas of expertise, please reach out. And again, just thank you so much for having me. I really, not only do I enjoy my time with you, Stephen, and with everybody else here, but I've also enjoyed my time on NACA's RSG. And I look forward to this partnership with the Assessment Institute for sure.
Zach, thank you. And again, you're reminding us important words, listen to understand, not just to respond. Wise words from Zach and Amber, now to you for your final thought.
Thank you so much. And Stephen, I had to share, NACA, we are incredibly excited to collaborate with you all for the upcoming assessment conference. And one of the reasons being is because assessment professionals, administrators, and campus activities professionals can and should be working together. We need each other. We have an opportunity to work together so that we can demonstrate the value that student life and programming provides to individual students and to the and to institutions. We drive retention, and campus activities professionals are truly retention specialists. And I think that that's been demonstrated through the pandemic, and we're going to continue to see that good work happen and really create that community and foster that sense of belonging. But that's where we can all come together as assessment and campus activities professionals, demonstrate and provide the data of how community and sense of belonging does happen when we provide that opportunity for students to have shared experiences. So I'm looking forward to greater collaboration, and I'm looking forward to the good work that's going to happen at the assessment conference. So thank you so much for utilizing this dialogue to kick off this new partnership.
Well, Amber, I am delighted about the partnership, and you mentioned the assessment conference. Now would be a good time to remind and invite our listeners to join us this year at the Assessment Institute. It will take place in late October. It will, again, this year be virtual and complimentary. That's right, free of charge. We're doing so by being able to build on our longstanding tradition of being the oldest and largest U.S. higher education assessment and improvement conference. And you can learn more and register at assessmentinstitute.iupui.edu. And we've been speaking today with Amber Shaverity Houston, Kayla Loper, and Zachary Clark, or Zach Clark, I should say, all from NACA, the National Association for Campus Activities. And if you haven't noticed yet and taken it down, now's a good time to make note of their website, NACA.org. That's NACA.org. Amber, Kayla, Zach, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Stephen. And I want to wish a wonderful and safe summer to all the listeners.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks again.
This has been Leading Improvements in Higher Education, a service of the Assessment Institute in Indianapolis. Learn more and access other episodes at our website, assessmentinstitute.iupui.edu. Our sponsor for this season is Watermark, the largest global provider of educational intelligence software solutions for higher education. Learn more at watermarkinsights.com. Our podcast producers are Chad Beckner, Caleb Keith, and Shirley Yorger, with original music composed by Caleb Keith. If you know someone who might enjoy the podcast, please encourage them to give us a listen. We appreciate you helping to spread the word. I'm Stephen Hundley from IUPUI, inviting you to join us again for Leading Improvements in Higher Education.